In a spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional lands we gather. Good morning. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria. My name is Oliver Belisle, and it is my pleasure to be your worship associate today, December 10th, 2017, for our Sunday service. With only a few weeks left before Christmas, we gather today to talk about a different kind of gift, the gift of presents. But before we dive in, please give your neighbors the gift of an uninterrupted service by turning off your electronic devices.
Today's service is about presents. One of the things that can help us be centered and present is a good meditative song. My dream for this congregation is that you become familiar with enough meditative songs that they just spring up inside of you whenever you need them. Kids too. So we will begin our service today by singing one of the most familiar UU meditative songs, Spirit of Life. And Nancy Dobbs is going to lead us in the sign language. Please rise as you are willing and able and follow Nancy Dobbs' hand gestures. Perhaps your life out there is filled with busy. Perhaps you have thoughts that are even now spinning about in your head, or concerns that are weighing heavily on your heart. Come in here and rest. For an hour or so, you have nowhere else to be. Enjoy the freedom of having only to be present here, right now, in this moment. Breathe in and breathe out. Keep breathing as Nancy Dobbs kindles the flame of our faith. Blessed be. If there are any children out there in the chairs, I invite you to come forward now and join us on the quilt. Feel free to bring a grown-up with you if you prefer. It's okay, you can stand. That's okay, too. As I said earlier, meditative songs like Spirit of Life can help us to be centered, calm, and present. Another one of my favorite methods is breathing. You hear me say it all the time, right? I say, breathe in, breathe out. I recently heard another version of that especially designed for kids. You ready for this one? Smell the soup, blow on the soup. So try it with me, grown-ups too. Imagine you have a bowl before you, a hot bowl of soup, tasty soup. There we go, Kiana's doing it. All right, now smell the soup and blow on it to cool it off. Good, do it one more time. You got it. Excellent. You can use that anytime you want to calm down. It's a really helpful technique, especially if you're feeling worried or upset. It helps you feel a little bit more peaceful. There's another thing that helps me feel more peaceful, especially at this time of year when it gets dark early, looking at lights. Holiday lights on the houses, solstice candles, the moon, the stars. This Tuesday night, Jewish people begin their celebration of the Festival of Lights, otherwise known as Hanukkah, is the Festival of Lights. And by the way, on December 19th, Tuesday, December 19th, there will be a Light of Acceptance walk in the dark from the synagogue to Centennial Square, where they will play music and light the big menorah. Everybody is welcome. Details will be in your e-weekly. Another lovely source of light is our Unitarian Universalist chalice and our candles of remembrance and hope. Sometimes if we are worried about someone, we light one of these candles and wish them wellness. I thought we could try that right now. Last Sunday, we heard that one of our church members, Bob Thompson, had surgery for cancer. Bob is still in the hospital, though his wife, Glenna, says he's doing much better, especially in the past couple days. I wonder if one of you would be willing to light a candle for Bob. Kiana, come on forward. And then the rest of you, if you can come up right here, Nati too, can stand right here. Maybe your mom can help you. If you stand right here so you can see. Can you see it? Come on over here. Go over that way so you can see better. Oh, we can see there too. That's okay. You can stay there. Okay. You can stay there too. That's all right. All right. Hold that. Okay. So as Kiana lights one of those candles there, yeah, send a wish to Bob for healing and strength. Breathe in. Breathe out. Good. And maybe you can let Nati blow this out. Can you blow that out, Nati?
Wait, no. Can I just put a candle up?
Yeah, you can hold it. Yeah. Can you blow it out? Okay. You'll light that one too? An extra candle for Bob? Okay. You got it. You got it. Now blow really hard. Nice. Okay. Now wait, stay here. I'll take the candle, but stay here. Kiana, can you stay here too? Thank you. Okay. So you can do this at home too. When you're worried about someone or something, ooh, don't do that. So something to know about candles. Nati, something to know about candles. They're really, really hot right above the flame. So you never want to touch them right above the flame. Yeah, and I'll take this because we're going to use it next. So you can do this at home with a grown-up helping you. If you ever want to wish someone well, you can light a candle for them or light a chalice. And one last thing. Sometimes we can't be present in person, so we send a token of our love and warm wishes. You guys did this several weeks ago. We're going to do it again today for Bob. During the service, we're going to pass this heart stone. See the heart stone? We're going to pass it to everybody in the congregation, throughout the congregation, so that everyone can each take a turn to warm the stone and imbue it with your good wishes for Bob. And then at the end of the service, whoever has the stone, give it to me, and I will bring it to him when I visit him early this week. First, I will invite the kids to touch it with their love. Can you touch the stone? Give a little bit of love. We're going to give it to Bob at the end of the service. Can you get a touch? Thank you. Thank you. And now you guys can go to your classes as the grown-ups rise, form the arches, and sing you on your way.
A few weeks ago, I participated in a workshop called Managing Hostile Interactions. The opportunity came through my involvement with Correctional Service Canada, where I mentor individuals who have been released after extended periods of incarceration. Moments after the workshop began, however, I realized that the skills I was about to learn were applicable to many different aspects of my life, from parenting to my job and everything in between. More than anything, this workshop taught us ways to diffuse anger before addressing its underlying causes. Because, as it turns out, our instinctive knee-jerk reaction to anger is largely defensive, backward, and counterproductive. Here are the most common strategies we deploy in the face of angry people, according to this workshop. The explanation. Well, Mr. So-and-so, the reason your premium went up so much from last year is... dot, dot, dot. Deflecting blame. It's not my fault. The underwriters increased your rates. And my personal favorite, correction. Actually, your premium hasn't gone up at all, Mr. So-and-so. What really happened is... dot, dot, dot. Now, these strategies aren't wrong, just poorly timed. They should come later in the conversation. And what should come first? The most important thing we can do initially is give the upset person the gift of our presence. We can be there for them as they unload their grievances and frustrations onto us. We can listen attentively without interrupting. And when it looks like they've run out of steam, we can resist the urge to go into our explanation for just a while longer. Instead, we can paraphrase what they've told us. This demonstrates that we were indeed listening. And then we can ask questions to expose the full extent of their grievance. To the upset customer, I can say, Well, Mr. So-and-so, it sounds like you weren't expecting this increase to your raise. Has this happened to you before, or is this the first time? Now, I've been using this approach, and I have to admit, I was a little skeptical at first. But the results are beyond my wildest expectation. Tantrums have been averted. Arguments have been prevented. And hurt feelings have been healed. All it takes is attentive presence. For years, I've been telling people, your presence is a present. As it turns out, that is more true than I ever imagined.
One day last spring, I was parked at the curb outside of the Victoria Music Conservatory, waiting for our daughter to get out of her music theory class. Our 4-year-old son was in the back in his car seat, waiting with me. I noticed a somewhat disheveled man walking slowly toward our car. He stopped right outside my door and looked at me as if he wanted to ask me something. I rolled down the window. Yes? He looked at me and said, "Can you please tell me it's going to be okay?" I paused for a beat to absorb what he'd said. And then without fully thinking it through, I just instinctively gave him what he asked for. I returned his gaze and replied, "It's going to be okay." "Thank you," he said, and walked away. Afterwards, I'd wondered if what I'd done was ethical. After all, I don't actually know it's going to be okay for any of us. It's not usually an assurance I give people. I try to be both honest and supportive, saying things like, "Whether it's okay or not, it will be what it is, and we will get through it as best we can." Was it wrong of me to tell him it was going to be okay? Then again, he didn't ask, "Is it going to be okay?" or "Do you think it's going to be okay?" He wasn't seeking my prediction or my opinion. It was a request. "Can you please tell me it's going to be okay?" So I did. Maybe I'm rationalizing it, but in that moment, I don't know, it seemed like the experience of human connection was more important than the content of what was said. It was about empathy and presence. What do we mean when we say presence? Maybe you can think of a time that you offered someone the gift of your presence. Maybe, like Oliver, you offer your presence as a part of your job. Maybe you do it in your circle of friends or family. Do any particular instances come to mind? What do you mean when you think about offering the gift of your presence? About 2 years ago, one of our monthly themes was listening. One of the spiritual exercises that some of us tried for our Soul Matters small groups asked us to listen to an important person in your life for 5 minutes. The task was to put your full focus on the person before you and just listen. No interrupting, no sharing your own thoughts or feelings. If you speak at all, you only say things that are aimed at drawing the other person out, deepening your understanding of their experience. If you've done this before, perhaps you've noticed how different it feels from our usual two-sided conversations with the back-and-forth exchange of stories and ideas. You notice, for example, how easy it is in those supposedly two-sided conversations to focus more on getting your own points across and less on actually listening to the other person. Sometimes we hardly listen at all. We just wait till we can interject our own thought or story. As Stephen Covey said, most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. Really listening, even for 5 minutes, felt different. You sink down into a calmer place within yourself and put your whole focus on understanding the other. What are they thinking, feeling? experiencing. Has someone ever listened to you that way, so that you felt held by their listening? What were the qualities in their listening that made it so? There are certain people in my life who listen to me in such a way that without consciously deciding to do so, I just open the floodgates. I can go on and on about important things, about not important things, about all the stuff that makes up the traffic of feelings and thoughts that zoom around on the tangled network of highways in my mind. I thought about the quality of their listening. What do they do that makes me feel so comfortable, so unguarded? Like in the Soul Matters exercise, they listen with their full attention. There's also an undercurrent of acceptance. They are totally non-judgmental and supportive. They know I'm flawed, but they're rooting for me. All of this allows me to relax into the cozy embrace of their presence. Sometimes presence doesn't involve so many words on either side. I remember when I was having a rough time in my 20s, I had two friends that would come over every Monday. One of them would cook dinner, and afterwards, we'd all watch a TV drama on which we were hooked. Melrose Place. Embarrassing, but true. They didn't have to say anything in particular, and I didn't say much. I was comforted by their presence, just showing up, sitting next to me on the couch during the show, held in their care. Similarly, during that same period, I remember offering my own quiet presence to friends who were having a hard time. It even worked over the phone. I just sit with them on the phone, long pauses between our few words, the staticky shushing on the line, letting them know that I was there, keeping them company through their struggles and sadness, assuring them that they were not alone. Of course, presence can also be a present in times of joy. Think of how much it can mean when someone takes the trouble to show up for you at an important event. Maybe you've been lucky enough to experience this once or twice in your life, perhaps at a wedding or a performance, a graduation or a special birthday. Even if the event is crowded and you don't get the chance to talk to everyone, seeing that they are there makes a difference, for their presence conveys their care. Sometimes we also get a chance to offer our presence in everyday moments of joy, like when a friend shares with you some good news or a child shows you something they've created. Think of what a gift it is when you're able to give them your full attention, your face lighting up with genuine happiness for them. Again, I ask, in hard times, in good times, in ordinary times, when have you offered someone the gift of your presence? And here's a second question. To whom would you like to offer the gift of your presence? For some of us, being present is a struggle. Even when we really care about the people for whom we want to be present, sometimes the busyness of life and/or the clutter in our own minds and hearts gets in the way. I am still haunted by that observation I heard this summer about parents, that it seems like many of us are raising our kids in our spare time. We have a friend, I will call her Grace, who has a super high power job in Washington, D.C., running the third largest charity in the states, a nonprofit that works on strategies to combat hunger and increase food security for working families and marginalized populations. She works long hours. At home, she has a partner who also works full-time and travels for work, and three little boys, two of whom are twins. Grace's schedule is mind-boggling. The details are a blur, but I seem to recall it's something like this. She wakes up at 5 a.m., gets herself ready for work, runs her kids through their morning routines, clothes, breakfast, packed lunches, etc. She works all day, and then she comes home to run the kids through their evening routines, dinner, baths, dealing with school forms and permission slips, etc. After the kids go to bed, she stays up doing household tasks like dishes and laundry and food prep for the next day. When her partner is not traveling for work, he helps. And in recent years, they've set up some extra support, a grandmother who takes the kids to school, a nanny who cares for them after school. But still, it's a lot. When we visited Grace last spring, I asked her, how do you do all that without getting totally exhausted and drained? She said that a few years ago, she made a decision that she had to make more space in her schedule, but also in her being. She had to expand her heart, her spirit. She said she cultivated a spaciousness inside her being. Whether she was at work or with her kids, Grace became intentional about engaging fully with whatever or whomever was before her. With her kids, for example, she says she remembers to enjoy them, to delight in them. As a result, she ends up getting energized instead of depleted. She is similarly excited by her work, about which she also cares deeply. And the stuff that's not delightful, both with the kids and at work, she says she lets it roll off her like water off a duck's back. She deals with it, but she doesn't get sucked in or pulled down by it. She doesn't let it get to her emotionally. She deals with it and moves on. When I asked her if she feels like she gets enough time with her children, just seeing them on weekends and at the beginnings and ends of the weekdays, she said two things. One, she takes comfort in the fact that she and her partner have surrounded their kids with a network of warm, loving, nurturing adults. Grandparents, teachers, coaches, nanny, friends, as well as both parents. The kids have plenty of support. And two, with regard to her own time with her children, since she can't get huge quantity, she focuses on quality. She says that when she's with them, she is fully with them. She told me that once when she herself was a child, living with her parents where they worked in Kenya, Grace got some sort of really bad illness, malaria or some such. She says she remembers feeling really, really sick, just awful. And her mother just held her and held her and held her until Grace felt like her mother's love for her was so big, it was even bigger than the illness. It was a powerful, all-encompassing, completely pervasive love, a love that could hold her through whatever was to come. Grace said that that's what she tries to give her own children. She wants them to know without a doubt that they are loved. She wants them to feel it in their bones so that it can feel her love carrying them through whatever lies ahead. You can say it in words, of course, I love you. But I like Grace's idea that you can convey such love with your presence. You can be with someone in such a way that they can feel it. That's the magic of fully attentive presence. It conveys care. And that care can imbue a person with a sense of comfort, strength, and worth. Of course, our own ability to offer someone else this quality of presence generally requires us to first cultivate within ourselves a certain degree of grounded calm, a reserve of inner peace. When I was on sabbatical last spring, I attended a yoga retreat in which the teacher shared with us this parable about peace. There was once a king who offered a prize to the artist who would paint the best picture of peace. Many artists tried, The king looked at all the pictures. In the end, it came down to a choice between two finalists. One was a picture of a calm lake. The lake was a perfect mirror, reflecting the beautiful trees and snow-capped mountains that surrounded it. Overhead was a blue sky with fluffy white clouds. All who saw this picture thought it was the perfect picture of peace. The other picture had mountains too, but these were rugged and bare. Above was an angry sky from which rain fell and in which lightning flashed. Down the side of one mountain tumbled a foaming waterfall. This did not look peaceful at all. But when the king looked, he saw behind the waterfall a tiny bush growing in a crack in the rock. In the bush, a mother bird had built her nest. There, in the middle of the rush of angry water, sat the mother bird on her nest in perfect peace. Which picture won the prize? The king chose the second picture. Because, explained the king, peace does not mean being in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. Peace means being in the midst of all of those things and still being calm in your heart. That is the real meaning of peace. In the tumult and tumble of your everyday lives, what do you do to cultivate that inner sense of calm? Perhaps you have a regular practice of meditation, yoga, or walking in the woods. Perhaps your life is so full that you rely on the spiritual practices that take less time. Singing a meditative song to yourself as you get ready for your day, taking a deep breath as you wait in line or ride a bus, taking a minute in the middle of a project to step outside for a deep knee bend and a big stretch, soaking in the energy of the fresh air, trees, and sky, or offering up a silent prayer or a loving kindness meditation for your loved ones as you fall asleep at night. I was saying that the more we do these things which cultivate inner peace, the better able we are to be present with others. I think this is true. I think it may also be true that sometimes being present with the person before you actually works like a spiritual practice in and of itself. If you've scheduled to be with someone anyway, whether you're getting your kid ready for bed or giving someone a ride to church, sometimes just deciding to give the other person your full attention can pull you into that calm, centered place. I think that's how it works for Grace. I think that's even how I felt after that brief encounter with the man who wanted me to tell him that it would be okay. Being present can help you feel centered. I hope you will share your own insights with me and with one another. What do you do to cultivate inner peace? If someone has ever offered you the gift of their presence, what was that like for you? In what ways do you offer your presence to others? To whom would you like to offer the gift of your presence? In closing, I'd like to add another meditative song to our toolkit. It's a really good song to sing anytime you want to center yourself. It's especially good for preparing to offer the gift of your presence to others. Filled with loving kindness. The words are in your order of service. If you want to practice that song, we've posted it on our Facebook group if you want to practice learning it. Mason Kipp said that the spiritual bottom line is this question. At the end of the day, do others feel loved in your presence? May it be so for all of us. Blessed be.